gets going, Porky. World famous Phil Henry Shaggart. Who's that?
This is Chuck Berry. Do 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 do.
Yeah, Chuck Berry. Oh yeah, okay, Chuck Berry. God rest his soul. I'm Robert Leonard.
You're Robert Gray.
Robert Leonard.
How is it that you make your you made a mistake? You.
What, are you afraid that you're related to a black guy?
I ought to kick your
hey. Help. I'm Robert Leonard. I'm much different.
Oh, I didn't hurt you that bad. And I'm Margaret Gray.
I'm Phil Henry.
About time to get in here, man.
I've been sitting here waiting for you guys to finish. Hi, welcome to the program, folks. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And there is the music there of Chuck Berry, who passed on at the age of 90. That's a long time that cat has lived, right, you know?
Well, 90 years of age, yes. That's 10 years shy of 100. It's too bad he didn't make it to 100.
I'll bet you Chuck Berry was about had it with this world. You know, you can, any time you want, Lord, you go right ahead and yank me out of this scene.
Well, anyway, we honor Chuck Berry, and we welcome you to the program. We haven't seen you guys in a while. We had some guest hosts.
We had Frank Gray, and we had Dave Durman.
Dave Durman?
Didn't say Dave Durman.
We'll talk about...
Wait a minute. I know who we had. We had Margaret's husband, Frank Gray, Chris Norton.
Yeah, that's right. And Bob Green.
Let me tell you something. Bob Green, I had a lot of people coming up to me on the street and saying, what hole did you pull that ass out of?
You got a lot of people coming up to you on the street.
Yeah, here we go again with you and the...
here we go again.
You got a lot of people talking to you.
Well, the general gets around. There are a lot of people that rely upon his opinion. And the many things that he do have to say.
Well, he does have to say.
Excuse me, Robert, I think...
No, Robert was right. What he does have to say.
What did I say?
What he do have to say.
Oh, and look at you laughing. You love it when mommy just butchers something beyond recognition, don't you?
No, not really. So what was the point?
The point is that I get around... It's like the stage. You want to play the old song? There you go. I get round, round, yeah. I get around.
I get around, yeah.
Yeah, and I get around. And a lot of these people come up to me, they go, where did you find Green? Was that something that we had... Did you find that laying under your porch? Jesus.
Well, a lot of people thought that he was a bit bizarre.
Bob Green is, as you know, a sponsor. What was bizarre?
Well, you heard the program. The guy's talking about... the sexual couple, the whole thing about corn.
Oh, I know that he has, he's got some unorthodox opinions. There's no question about that. But you were there with him.
I know. I just try to keep myself clear of that jazz.
Well, so here you are talking about him after the fact.
What about it?
Yeah, General, it's kind of not very nice.
Hey, General, it's not very nice. I sat there.
Right, hold on. You were the host of the show, and Green sat there, and it was Bob Green today, right?
Yeah, I don't remember half the stuff, but I do know that people said, how did you sit there without taking this guy, picking him up over your head, almost as if you're Frankenstein, and he's Igor, and you're going to throw him into the pit in that goddamn windmill, whatever.
You're talking about the film Frankenstein.
All right, so...
You know what I mean.
Yeah, sure I do. Welcome to the program.
Oh, give me a break.
Welcome to the program, the Phil Henry Show. We have with us today, by the way, Bob Green will join us to recap. We have...
What do you mean he'll join us to recap?
He's going to join us to recap what was on the program, because I know that you had a lot of people bellyaching and...
You found out about that?
Yeah, because the guy called, and he said... I know that I'm Bob Green. What did he say, Margaret?
He called up and he said he'd like to come on the program and do a post-mortem of an autopsy. He'd like to dig through the gut.
So he figured that he was treated unfairly, is that it?
No. He just figured that some of the things he said he needed to explain. Now, you're just verifying that because of the people that have been walking up to you on the street.
Well, I'll tell you, the guy's a weird ass. And I say that with all due respect.
Yeah, now you're backing down.
I'm not backing down.
Right. Well, Bob Green will be along a little bit later on. We also have with us, and as you like to hear him, with Sean Spicer, who is the press secretary for the, the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Harvey Wireman will be joining us on a feature that they had recently, I think, on one of the sports pages. Tom Brady is going to be 40 when the football season commences in 2017. And that's a milestone.
Well, you know, we talk about George Blanda.
Right. So Harvey Wyman's going to be on to talk about Blanda and the playing. Do you remember watching him play?
I watched George Blanda play with the Oakland Raiders.
Right. And I saw him play with the Raiders. I remember as a little kid watching him play with the Houston Oilers. And then Bobby Dooley be on with this year for talking about this year's Easter services. One of the neighbors there at the Western States Homeowners Association, I'm not sure. There has been some contretemps, Margaret.
Well, there is a bit of a political discussion going on. As you know, the L.A. County Sheriff has been called out there some three or four times when they have these Easter services at Western States because there is something very non-Christian about it. Not that anyone has anything against that necessarily. But there is something very vulgar and jungle-like. I can't...
Well, you know, I've got something against it. Easter's a Christian service.
Well, yes, but there are jungle drums, and there's chanting. I don't know. So that, at least, is what that's about.
So that's coming on. Right now, we're going to do some traffic here with Bob Bakian. And Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Bill, welcome back here to the Central Lab. It's been a while as we do all the traffic uptown and uptown ride. And right now, downtown Los Angeles, Giants have was the 15-3 game, scoring Bill about 5 o'clock swept, and they swept it up there, and an incidental sweep of that thing was well, that Sky Boy.
I'm at Central Lab, and there's a, right now, the MVP, there's an incidental collection of ball, there's Law and Hardy up there, something to see in them as well, Greta Garbo and Ant Girl, and I'm there with Boy Sky Baby Sweetcat.
There'll be incidental collection of my remains. Sky Baby Sweet Fan.
Hi, everybody. Duck Durton here. And every weekend at 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and 10 o'clock, we do the Duck Durton Report. We have the news that you got to use. The news you use with Duck Durton. We have an hourly report between 5 and 11, and then we go back to playing the all-night movies, all the horror things that you've enjoyed, all those slasher films. But don't forget, Duck Durton, that's my name. Because without it, without my name, without your viewership, I am nothing. I am absolutely nothing. Duck Durton, every week at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, just however long. Duck Durton. Without you, I ain't. The Duck Durton Report. I've told you before, and I'll tell you again. Get those toys out of my bedroom. I don't want to see the stuffed teddy bear. I don't want to see the train. I don't want to see anything.
Is this your husband, a man who's lost his mind slowly over the years, till he imagines little people playing under his bed and in his closet? Certainly, we've all dealt with that. But at the Hoover Institute, we deal with all manner of mental incapacity. The Hoover Institute. Won't you join us there at the Hoover Institute? You won't? Oh, okay, then forget it.
The Hoover Institute. For people just like you. Well, maybe not just like you, but pretty close.
The Hoover Institute. We do hope you'll take advantage of what we think will be an exciting new way to be, to live, to eat, to breathe, to think. You know what I mean?
The Hoover Institute. Try it. They're in the yellow pages or in the green pages or whatever exists today.
The red pages, too.
I told you, keep the toys out of there and the bunny rabbit. It's mind-melding.
The Hoover Institute has purchased a 2.5-hour commercial. You may call that an infomercial, but no, it isn't. It's just a radio commercial that goes for 2.5 hours. However, we are not going to put you through that. Our programming people, as well as the people that run the Phil Hendry Show, would not have it. Just remember, the Hoover Institute, for people whose minds have really gone, really, really gone, but you don't want to put them anywhere other than a place that reminds them of home. The Hoover Institute.
The Hoover Institute. 3 locations. Denver, Colorado, St. Petersburg, Russia, and my preferred location, okay, which is Suzhou, China, but I guess a lot of you wouldn't like that.
No one cares, Ralph. No one cares at all as you try to once again stick your bloody vacation photograph in the middle of a commercial.
I apologize, please. The Hoover Institute, for 21 years, a place that no one even knew existed, and yet we tried to help people that came to us. Some people came to us because they thought they had a dentist's office. One time a guy came to us, he thought it was a gas station. We tried to help all of them. Some of them we kidnapped and put away in our cellar. The Hoover Institute, treating mental illness for 21 years, mostly treating our own mental illness. The Hoover Institute. Hoover, 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 Hoover. Hoover. I'm Seamus Hoover, and I started the Hoover Institute. Yes, way back in 21 years, that would put us back 1996 or some jazz. I started the Hoover Institute. I know I should be much clearer. Please, don't worry about it. I know what I'm doing. I started the Hoover Institute I started the Hoover Institute. You might as well explain that.
I had to slap him.
I started the Hoover Institute after having lunch with my then fiancée, well, a girlfriend, well, we just met, having lunch with her at a Brazilian Italian restaurant, okay? Now, I noticed the rear end on the right. Forget it. The Hoover Institute. It's been influenced by some of the world's great minds. Sigmund Freud, Freud Brown, Floyd Brown, and Floyd Whitaker. The Hoover Institute also uses the methods developed by Carl Jung and Luther Adler, as well as the other Adler guy, Lou Adler, who was the producer of The Mamas and the Papas. The Hoover Institute helped me. Can it help you? That's anybody's guess. But it helped me. That's all I care about. I'm on this commercial to tell you that it helped me. But I can't guarantee it'll help you. I don't know what kind of a person you are. I don't know if you have the... I don't know if you have the stomach. I don't know if you know what it takes. But the Hoover Institute, a proud sponsor of The Phil Hendry Show. The Hoover.
Hoover.
Institute.
Institute.
Hoover. A brand name in mental health since 1996.
Hello, I'm Susan Gern. I was a member of the Hoover Institute patient choir. I had elevated myself from a place of complete catatonia to a place where I could carry a tune. And today, I'm no longer at the Hoover Institute. I live in a one-bedroom, a studio apartment, and I bag groceries down the street. I'm doing better, but that's about all I can do right now. I'd like to go back to the Hoover Institute and have dinner and maybe breakfast or lunch occasionally because I can't quite figure out how to use a fork and a knife.
The Hoover Institute has helped people just like Susan, exactly like her. In fact, in some instances, they looked a lot like her. In fact, it might have been Susan coming in and trying to get some extra mental health treatment for the same money. You know what? You did screw us, didn't you? Don't forget the Hoover Institute. In point of fact, perhaps you should forget the Hoover Institute. I would if I were you. Who wants to remember that place?
Hoover
Institute.
Brown-eyed handsome man that won the game. It was a brown-eyed handsome
man. Oh, yeah. That's Chuck there, huh?
A brown-eyed handsome man. Do you know what that song's about?
I know.
No, wait. Do you know what it's about?
About a brown-eyed man.
It's about a black man who wins the affections of all of the women.
Bull crap.
Yeah, it is, man.
All right. It was Chuck Berry's little homage to the what? To the black man of the 50s, okay? To the overlooked accomplishments of the African-American male of the 50s. How about that?
That's a horse a load.
What does that mean, a horse a load?
That's a horse and a load that the horse dropped.
Okay, you know, Harvey Weierman...
Well, don't give me the okay, Phil. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
No, he doesn't. You're all alone on that one, General.
You know what? How would you like your ass kicked in new and inventive ways? Grab the hip.
Come on, will you?
Ow!
I didn't touch him. Let the record show.
Well, the record can't show it.
All right, well, then let the record hear it. Let the record hear that I didn't touch him.
But the record can't do that either.
Well, you guys forget it. We have with us Harvey Weierman. Harvey is, as you know, a retired attorney at law from San Marino, California, and he's going to join us here on our newsmaker line. We have Harvey discussing the 40 years of Tom Brady. Harvey, how are you?
I'm good. Let me tell you something. I don't envy you at all, Phil, dealing with that jackass.
Hey, you know what, Harvey? Just take a chill, huh?
Oh, take a chill, huh? You know, let me say this. I think that it's great that you guys have the show, but listening to you people is like listening to a madhouse of ass and asset, which is the female version of an ass.
All right, Harvey, let's just figure out what we want to talk about here. George Blanda.
The female version. Did you get a load of that pipe?
George Blanda.
Well, you know, I wanted to use the name George Blanda. Hold on. Ha-ha. I wanted to use the name George Blanda as a counterpoint to the Tom Brady, and everybody's talking about him and everything like that.
Now, Tom Brady is 40 in this coming season, right?
Yes, he'll be 40. I think it's great, and there's no question in my mind that he should be honored and he should be held high and held aloft above everyone's heads. Just, you know, pick him up and hold him up there if you want. But I don't think... it's such an unusual achievement.
All right, well, when we talk about Tom Brady turning 40, I remember Daryl Green of the Washington Redskins played cornerback until he was 40.
Daryl Green, but that's, he played quarterback?
Well, that's what we're talking about with Brady.
Cornerback.
He's talking about cornerback, not quarterback.
You're talking about what?
Talking about quarterback?
Bud, corner.
Oh, you mean the defensive player?
Yes.
Well, what about him?
He played till he was 40, man. He's playing a position where you got to run backwards.
All right, Phil, take it easy. Jesus.
All right, Mr. It's going to be okay.
Hey, I know it's going to be okay. I just want to emphasize that. So there was a guy I thought would play at a really demanding position and made it to the age of 40. You got Tom Brady now. You George Blanda, of course, back in the 60s was sort of, he's sort of legendary because of those exploits, because of coming in and actually saving the day and so on and so forth. There's like a guy riding in on the horse and you know, saving the town from burning down. Do you think there's a difference between what Blanda did and Brady?
Well, you know, there's no question that what Brady's doing is, you know, this is a guy that does it every week in and week out. Oh, God damn it.
What's wrong?
I got that Jeffrey Lord on my TV. Get him off.
Dad.
Get him off.
Are we going to be okay?
I'll be fine. Just get it off.
Dad.
Get. I'm at my daughter's place.
No.
That's my granddad.
Get that off.
All right. Thank you. Cartoon City. That's perfect. Yeah. We got Bug. We got the Bug Bunny on you. Hey, honey. Want to see the Bug Bunny?
Who's he talking to?
Talking to your granddaughter?
No, I'm talking to my son. Yes, it's my granddaughter. I'm talking to the water bottle, the bottled water guy. I want to know if I was talking to my granddaughter. Yeah, honey. There's Bug Bunny.
It's called Bugs Bunny.
It's called Bugs Bunny.
Who is?
The cartoon character's Bugs.
All right, honey, there's Bugs Bunny. What's the pig? That's not the bunny. That's a pig.
Porky Pig?
That's it. Do you want to see Porky? You want to see the Porky Pig? Okay. So, now that I got that off. So, that's a very good point, Phil. George Blanda was playing, you know, off the bench. And he would come in and save the day, like you were saying. But with Tom Brady...
Wait a minute. Blanda played every day, too, up to a point.
Well, he played... What do you mean he played every day?
He played for, like Phil was saying, played for the Oilers. Played for the Baltimore Colts.
Yeah, well, look. Let me tell you. Blanda was 30... Was he came in 1948, I guess, 31. So he would have been 40 in 1968, or yeah, something like that. So even when he was playing with the Oilers, he was, you know, in his 30s. We've got plenty of quarterbacks that play in their 30s.
No, yeah, we can't talk about George Blanda's exploits as a, you know, a senior citizen. Like, and I say that jokingly, until we talk about him playing in his 40s. Any other players that you're aware of, Harvey, that played, you know, well into their later years?
Well, you know, there was a guy, and this is an interesting case. So there's a guy named Wenceslas Williams. That was a joke, the kid, the good King Wenceslas. They called him Wenceslas Williams, and he played for a while in something called the Continental Football League. Now, that's not a major league, but it was a professional league, nonetheless.
What's the name of this?
Called the Continental Football League.
And where did they play?
They play right here in the United States. And they had teams in Orlando. They had a team in Akron. I think they had a team in Toronto, as a matter of fact, the Toronto Rifles.
What is meant when you say minor league football? We have college football, and then we have the professional. So what is the minor league football? You know,
it's like it's...
Between a rank between pro and college, right?
Well, it's sometimes you can't even say... Yeah, you wonder whether they could beat a college team. But I would say, yes, it's somewhere between, because a lot of guys didn't have the advantage of playing in the college ranks, or they didn't get drafted right away, and they still want to play football.
See, that's what I've always thought of semi-pro ball or pro ball.
But was it pro ball or semi-pro?
Who?
This Continental Football League.
It was pro to a point, but it wasn't the NFL is all I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, they had owners and... They had money.
Well, yeah, they had whatever you want to call money. You know, if you call that money.
Well, what does that mean?
They didn't have a lot of money.
I remember they had a team in Toronto, the Toronto Rifles.
Well, get a load of you.
Phil knows more trivia about football teams.
Yeah, where did you figure that one out?
I figured it out because I knew you were going to be talking about it, so I looked it up. All right. So the Continental Football League, what about them?
What about them? They were a... why was I talking about this?
You're talking about a man...
Yeah, good King Wenceslas.
Oh, yeah, good King Wenceslas. Well, what about him?
Was there a guy named Wenceslas Williams?
Oh, yeah. That's a guy.
Are you sure this guy's named Wenceslas Williams?
Yes, I'm sure, because he was a player for the Fort Wayne team, or one of these teams in the Continental Football League.
That would have been the CFL, right?
Yes, Margaret, the CFL.
I say that because how do you know you're not talking about the Canadian Football League?
I'm not talking about the Canadian Football League.
What an asshole. You know that?
Well, get a load of her, will you?
Come on, Margaret.
No, I'm sorry.
You know, Harvey, if you would just calm down.
I'm calm down. She's asking me about the Canadian Football League.
Which is a perfectly reasonable thing to ask about when you're talking about the CFL, right?
No, not necessarily.
Why don't you blow the phone, God?
Margaret.
What did she say to me?
I think nothing. So, what about this guy, Wenceslas Williams?
That, I just looked it up. He played till he was 59.
He played till... God damn you to hell.
Well, I was waiting for you to spit it out.
I was gonna spit it out.
All right, so he played till he was 59 in the Continental Football League. Big deal.
Big deal? You think...
Dad?
Honey, just give me... God damn it.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine, but I choked on some spittle. I thought it was... I was a goner there for a second. The Canadian Foot God...
Not the Continental Football League.
The Continental Football League? That's still football, isn't it? You're still getting hit. You still got guys that are sticking their helmet right in your gut and driving you into the turf. And the guy played till he was 59 years old.
What were his stats like?
His what?
What were his, you know...
What were his numbers?
How many touchdown passes did he have?
The touchdown passes, you know, went down as the years went by. I think he peaked in the Continental Football League. I think he had like 40 or 45 touchdown passes into his 40s. And then it gradually went down until he got to be 59. He was 59 years of age. And I don't think he threw any touchdown passes. I think they basically put him in, and he would run for his life. I mean, I saw some film where they'd say, are you sure you want to go out there? His name was Dean Williams, by the way, but they nicknamed him Wenceslas Williams.
Because of good King Wenceslas?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I can't see any. They had no reason. That's just what they called him.
Well, this is the most asinine thing.
I told you. That's why I'm not there.
You want me to tell the story? Do you want me to just...
Go ahead, Harvey. It's fine.
God damn.
So he's Wenceslas Williams. Then what?
Then what? He's Wenceslas Williams. Then he went out there at 59. And for two plays, he's running away from getting destroyed. And then they pull him and they put in another quarterback.
So his 59th year in football was spent running away from people.
Yes. And then they pull him out.
And why did they do that?
Because it was publicity value.
Yeah, that's probably publicity value to get a guy in there, a quarterback in there, you know, who's the oldest that ever played.
Exactly. You get people out there, they go, hey, yeah. And now number 12, Wenceslas Williams. The guy trots out there, if you call that trotting. He gets there and starting at quarterback, the first play of the game, he drops back to pass. And now, you know, because the whole defense is coming for him and he's running backwards for 30 yards, tackled. Second play of the game, he runs backwards for another 30, tackled. That's the end of the game.
The end of the game for him.
Yeah, end of the game for him. Then they bring in another quarterback.
And they'd start him. I'm back, by the way. And they'd start him anyway.
You know, since you walked out on me, Margaret, I don't think I'll talk to you.
Come on, Harvey. Come on, man.
Yes.
What a baby.
I'm a baby? You're the one that walked out on the word, what an asshole. Then you walked out. Then you're talking to me from wherever you're talking to me from. And now you sit down and you want to be all kissy face.
Fuck.
Hey, Margaret.
Oh, my God. Did she say what I thought she said?
Yes. All right.
Boy, I tell you, that's childish.
You know, Harvey, you're a walking double standard. You're just a walking double standard. And that's all I've got to say.
Ow.
Oh, you don't think that's bad enough, huh?
Ow. Ow.
Margaret, just consider the source.
Yeah, that's right. Consider the source. A 78-year-old man.
So, Harvey,
how'd you begin 78? I thought you're a WW2 veteran.
Yeah, you're right. 88-year-old man.
So, Harvey, now that we've got the story of Wenceslas Williams out of our system, what else do you want to talk about here in terms of, players playing well into their 40s?
Well, you've got examples of players. Baseball, it's easy. You've got a lot of pitchers. One would think that, you know, you couldn't play pitcher into your 40s, but if you stop to think about it, I guess that's the only position because it's physical, but you're in one place. It really just necessitates throwing a baseball and being smart enough to throw the right pitch at the right time. So you've had a lot of pitchers. The most notable, of course, was Gaylord Perry.
Gaylord.
Come on, bud.
What a day. You know that name does exist.
Yeah.
My name's Galen. What about that?
So Gaylord Perry pitched well into his 40s, if not later, into his 50s, I think. Phil Negro was another one who pitched a long, long time.
Phil Negro?
Not Negro. Negro, you dumbass. Come on, bud, before somebody kicks your ass and I can't stop them.
That's right. And it may be me.
All I'm trying to do...
Come on, bud.
So there was Phil Negro. Then you had Warren Spahn. Warren Spahn pitched well into the 60s. That guy, Warren Spahn, was a World War II veteran who came out and pitched, and he was a very good pitcher, pitched in a few World Series for the Milwaukee Braves. And of course, Nolan Ryan, I think, pitched into his 40s. I could be wrong about that.
How old was Nolan Ryan?
I don't know, but I think he hit 40. But the sport where you really see a lot of the old-timers is hockey.
Hockey? How do you figure that?
I don't know. Gordie Howe played into his 40s. The other guy, Bobby Hull, played into his 40s. And a lot of other Howard, who was that guy? Hugh Howell, that guy that played for the Kings for a while? He played into his 40s. A lot of gray-haired old men out there. It's very interesting. And I think it's because hockey, just like baseball, it has its very physical position, but also has its positions where you just need a couple of brain cells, play defense, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I was wondering when I saw those old hockey players, but Gordie Hull was he was a guy that skated and scored. What did I say, Gordie Hull?
You said Bobby Howe.
No, he didn't. He said Bobby Hull and Gordie Hull.
Gordie Hull.
Bobby Hull, Gordie Howe.
That's it. Yeah, that's it.
I know who Gordie Howe is.
Oh, you're back, huh?
Fuck off.
Margaret.
No, I'm sorry.
Then don't come in here and start whipping out the F words.
Yeah, it was great. It's really bad.
Oh, was it really bad? I'm so sorry.
There it is.
Look, and have some respect for the boy, huh?
Margaret, I apologize, okay? I'm sorry that I said whatever I said.
Well, are you sincere?
Yes, I am.
What did he say, by the way?
I don't know. I forget.
I do, too.
RK, can we sit down?
RK?
Okay, can we sit down?
You had the wrong vowel.
Well, he had the wrong... It was a consonant that he...
All right, so we have... Jesus.
Man, we have people... I'll tell you, man, talk about paddling.
Yes. You know what, Robert? I would expect better than you. Calling me a paddler? I'm trying to get this thing done.
Robert is speaking the truth. You guys are whittling dick.
Excuse me.
All right, Harvey, anything else in this cavalcade of old guys before this whole show goes south?
Oh, your show went south. Your show went south the first minute I was on. No, I would say...
Is that right?
Yeah. Tennis is another one. You get a few 40-year-old guys like Pancho... who was the guy?
Pancho Villa.
Pancho Villa.
You mean Pancho Gonzalez?
That's the guy. Wasn't he 40?
I have no idea. Who's he?
All right, well, that answers that. Then there was Bobby Riggs.
Well, no. Bobby Riggs was a competitive professional player, but by the time he challenged the women, you mean?
Yeah.
He was an exhibition. I don't think he was playing full-time, was he?
I don't know, but, just these are examples of these old players, and if you stay in shape, and the thing with Brady, God knows what he's doing. I don't think anyone really fully knows.
Well, I mean, they asked him to write down his regimen.
Well, he can write it down, but I don't know that it's going to do anybody any good. And to be honest with you, I don't think he wants to. I think Brady keeps that close to the chest. He keeps that close to his vest. He keeps it close to
his breast.
His breast.
Thank you, Margaret.
That's Margaret.
Yes, I'm back.
Well, what's wrong?
It's just she says I'm a hypocrite, and she's sitting there.
All right, Harvey, you want me to let you go?
I just want to say one thing. That the guy that keeps it close, yeah, Brady, he keeps whatever it is that he does to keep young close to his dick.
That is really...
My God!
Did mommy call him back?
That was...
Call him back. I fear for the man's mental health.
I've never heard Harvey pull anything like that before.
No, sir. Yeah, Mr. Wireman, Mr. Henry, he's pissed off.
No, I'm not. Give me the phone. Hey, Harvey, I got to put you back. Can I put you back on? I had to dump out, yeah.
All I did.
Why did you do that?
Because you got the dump button, don't you?
I've got the dump button.
I've never heard such childish behavior in my life.
Margaret, just go back into the kitchen, all right? Go back to the kitchen. I have the dump button. Yeah, I just don't expect you to do that.
Well, I had to let out my anger somehow. Because she's standing there taking these shots.
I'm not taking...
Margaret.
Margaret, go on back to the kitchen.
Go on back to the kitchen. Listen...
What did I knock over, bud?
Just a knife or something.
A knife?
Nah, it's just something here in the studio. So, here's what I want to say to you. that kind of language is not, you know, tolerated here. It shocks me and surprises me, you being an attorney, and I apologize for whatever provocation led you to that.
All right, there. All I'm looking for is a little bit of that. Because I come on here and I'm trying to, in good faith, talk to you about these old creeps. And what do I get from you? I got Margaret, you know, she's leaning over you. Taking a...
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. I just belched. Taking all these shots. I don't think it's fair.
I want to say something. I came in here... So he doesn't want to talk to me.
I would take that as a very definite yes. Thank you, Harvey, on the old timers getting older, and, you know, there ain't nothing new under the sun, Jack, except whatever tomorrow brings. We have coming up next Bobby Dooley and her husband, Steve. This year's Easter services at Western Estates are being challenged by at least one neighbor because these Easter services do seem to, they get weirder and weirder, and they get further and further out, and...
They become very, what's the word, pagan-like.
World famous Phil Henry Show. This is beautiful. Where's this from?
This is from The Natural Born Killer.
Very beautiful song. We'll be right back.
What is this? The Natural Born Killer?
The song is from the movie.
Wish I was done.
God damn.
The great hits from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, then go back to the 50s. All of it in one beautiful package. Yes, the best of rhythm and blues / love ballads can be yours from Box Go Records. The best of the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, then go back to the 50s. That's how we lay it out on the disc. That's how we want you to listen to it. We play you selections, but we don't have the legal right. In fact, we barely have the legal right to package these and sell them to you. But trust me, all the great songs are there. Voodoo Man by the Shenanigans. Let Me Listen to You Till Tomorrow by The Four Swings. The Swing Set of Love by The Merry-Go-Round. I'm just making these up because there's a couple that I forgot. These are the greatest hits that you remember from your youth. You remember these songs as if these were songs being sung to you by your own mother. The lullabies. The great hits. Here's one. Remember this one? I like the way you look and the way you book. I'm making that up, too. There's got to be a song that's just like that. The biggest hits from the 50s, 60s... No. The biggest hit from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, then go back to the 50s, can be yours now from Regency Records and Box Go. Send us a check, a self-addressed stamped envelope, and then don't bother us for 3 weeks. It'll come to you, but don't bug us, because if we get any kind of crap at all, any crap, we won't send it to you. That's the greatest hits of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then go back to the 50s from Regency Records. Available now by sending us $9.99 and a self-addressed stamped envelope. Then sit back, keep your mouth shut, and wait. The biggest hits can be yours. Remember Bob Makemba with that great song from South Africa, The Chanting of the Lion? Hey, it's a great song, and there's more just like it. In fact, there are more exactly like it. In fact, we've got 16 different versions of that song on the greatest hits of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then go back to the 50s on Regency Records. Available now in tape and paperback.
Are you all right, Hal?
Yeah, I finally can breathe. When your mother visits. Yes, old people can reek. It happens, and it's one of those things you've got to plan for. Using Pepperdine House Spray, you can get the stench of old people out of your house as soon as they leave.
I love my mother, but you're right.
Oh, God. Recovery time is expensive. You could miss time off from work. Why not go ahead and get our Pepperdine spray and make sure the smell of her mother and her father, or if she complains, your mother and father, cleans out of the house very, very quickly so that you can have a happy, fulfilling marriage and the whole thing doesn't have to go to hell. Smells great in here now, honey.
You bet, with the new Pepperdine spray.
It's named after the university in Malibu. Why? That's none of your business. The new Pepperdine spray. Yep, smells good to me now. Available in the can, the canister, or roll-on.
Yeah!
Well, I'm a rider, this is General Galen Shaw. Welcome back into the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, it's a jumping little...
And, listen, this is more of this, what's the guy's name?
That's Chuck Berry, man.
Oh, yeah, Chuck Berry. God bless him. Didn't we do a tribute to Chuck Berry?
I don't think so. I think that you were off the air. It was over the weekend, and then we had, what's his name?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, we had a Bob Green, and then we had Chris Norton, and we had your husband, Frank.
Yes, Frank had a good time. He told me that he had a wonderful time reminiscing and remembering some of the greats.
Who was the guy? He had one of his buddies calling in.
Well, he had Davik, Davik Banna.
Oh, yeah. Now, what did that guy do?
He was a producer of some kind. I don't know. He was a hanger-on. I know he made a lot of money. He had a very beautiful wife, but what he did exactly, it's gives me the creeps, you know.
Did you know him?
I knew him. He hung around the house a lot, so...
And Chris Norton, who has the new movie coming out.
Yeah, sure, he's got a new movie. Give me the break on that one, will you? What do you mean, the new movie?
He got the movie coming out called Norton Mountain.
No, it isn't, man. He can't name it Norton Mountain.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because he named... What's his name? Rex Rod?
Rex Rod is his new name. We'll find out. I don't know. It could be something beautiful. It could be something really... I'm sure it will be something really strange. Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley joining us on route right now to Orange County. Bobby, going down to visit your folks?
We are, Phil. I'm going to see my mom and dad for a couple days. It's been a while since we've seen them, and they're out visiting. They live in North Carolina now.
Whereabouts?
In Charlotte, North Carolina. So Steve's doing the driving, and I'm going to do all of the talking.
Bobby, we want to talk to you about the Easter services that have become quite well-known there at Western States.
Well, yes, I appreciate that. I am concerned, though, that it becomes a focal point of some kind of humor.
We don't intend that.
Yeah, but you have jungle drums and everything.
I don't care if we have jungle drums. We have a Christian service. You understand that, Mr. Henry?
I understand, but there you cannot deny the fact that you... First of all, I don't understand...
We have our homeowners association is very active. We have had an Easter egg roll every year for the 16, 17 years that Steve and I have been involved here with Western Estates. We have the Easter egg roll. Then we have the Easter ham, which is our celebration of the ham. That is the Easter ham, which is not Jesus, but some people think that symbolizes Jesus, the Easter ham.
Why would they say that?
I'm sorry?
Why would they say something like that? That is gruesome and grotesque.
Not to mention, it sounds almost sacrilegious.
I beg your pardon. Oh, my.
Not my wife.
Hey, Steve, keep your eye on the road, okay?
Keep your eyes on the road. I am dumbfounded that you would say that.
Well, what do you mean the Easter ham represents Jesus?
Margaret, you went like this. You went, ham. Oh, my, I guess every day we get a little bit older, don't we?
Aren't you cute? You know, we'll talk about that one later. What do you mean?
We'll talk about that one later.
Hey, Bobby, stop it, okay? You're an adult woman.
You were going to say I'm a grown woman.
Yeah, you were, Miss Henry.
All right, I'm a grown woman.
You're a grown woman. Act like it.
All right. But keep in mind what you have just inferred, that somehow what we do is sacrilegious. I am a very... very devout churchgoer.
All right, I believe that. I don't even know if you... I'm not going to ask you any questions that are probably going to set you off here, Bobby, like, have you run this service that you have or this Easter, you know, drumming celebration? Have you run it by a Christian minister or have you run it by any member of the clergy to see that it actually is, you know, is what it is?
I don't have to do any such thing. We have a great many people living at Western Estates who are Christian ministers who partake of the Easter jungle drum. So,
yeah, Mr. Henry, we got a few of them anyway.
Like who?
I'm not about to break their I'm not going to break their
anonymity.
Anonymity. Their anonymity, yeah.
Yeah, all right, so I'm not going to do that.
All right, so forget about that. You've had the LAPD there.
I was going to make that point. The Los Angeles Police Department has been there, hasn't it?
Margaret, if you could pop a few more peas, that'd be great.
Has the Los Angeles Police Department... been there?
God.
Has it?
You know it has, Phil. And they have been called out here every year by some busybody person that does not live here that wants to ruin this celebration that we feel is very devout.
All right, I won't judge it, but it started out as a regular Easter service. We were told by people that no longer live at Western Estates, people that are simply there, people that lived there for a while and then became extremely shocked at the goings-ons.
Oh, don't give me that crap.
People were probably kicked out.
They were probably kicked out that they don't want their name used. I think that if you're going to take a shot like that, you better let your name be used.
They're saying that it went from a regular Christian service to some kind of African drumming and a wild frenzy dancing around a bonfire?
It is frenzy dancing. We're having a... It's very traditional. And we have the Easter egg roll.
Yes, yes, yes. And you have the Easter ham.
That's right. We have the Easter ham. And then we do a very traditional Easter dance. I'm sure you've seen Easter bonnets, Mr. Hendry? Mr. Hendry?
Yes, I've seen Easter bonnets.
Well, that's what the gals wear. And the men wear tails, and we dance, and then we light. Yes, we light a beautiful fire out in our on the heather, and it becomes quite a bit of a bonfire because there's some old patio furniture. We save it up, and we have people throw furniture into the fire.
Wait a minute. You have people do what?
This is old furniture, all right?
All right, all right. So you have them throw it in there. That's weird to me. What are you doing that for?
I told you, because it's old.
And you save it up till Easter?
Yes. And we start throwing chairs and things into the fire. And then one of our very traditional couples, they go out wearing the bonnet and the tails and the top hat, and they begin to do a little bit quicker dance. And then it becomes a little more frenzied until finally the top hat comes off and the man takes his shirt off. And the lady sometimes, she's wearing bloomers, okay? But sometimes she'll strip off the dress.
See, this is what I'm saying. It doesn't sound like there's any control. It doesn't sound like that there is any decency.
You know what? I've had about enough of that.
I want to play the jungle drum.
We have the recording there, Bud, right?
Yeah, this is the jungle drum from last year.
Now, this features my husband, Steve, in a very traditional Easter dance. Do you know the song, In Your... Margaret, you know how to sing this.
Yes, In Your Easter Bonnet.
Yeah, with all the trimmings on it.
Well, whatever it is.
Right. That is the song, but you do it in
Well, I do it in a Hawaiian.
Right. So here is Steve. Throw the furniture in. Now, throw it in.
Woo!
That's only a part of the festivities.
That sounded like insanity.
That was ridiculous.
What?
What did you say?
What did you say?
That sounded like insanity. I heard you saying, throw the furniture in.
Yes, and then we heard your so-called Hawaiian version of Easter bonnet.
Play it again.
I dare you to play it again.
All right, play it again, bud. I don't care. Play it again.
Are you sure?
Play it again.
Well, I don't.
Everyone gather the furniture. Take it off. Take the dress off.
Yeah!
Wow. More furniture.
All right, Ms. Dooley, how do you justify that?
Justify what?
I can hear you in the background, more furniture.
No, then you told a lady, you said somebody take it off.
Never take it off their dress.
She wanted to take the dress. She's wearing bloomers. I don't understand.
Every year we do it, Mr. Hendry, and I have a lot of fun.
Every year you do it, and you got the L.A. sheriff out there. Complaints from neighbors.
Yes, complaints from very, very, I think, bad neighbors and people that are trying to disrupt and blaspheme our religious celebration.
Now you call it blasphemy, and that drumming, I think, is racist.
You talk about racist.
You're not making fun of Native people.
We are not making fun. That was a spontaneous... That happened 2 years ago when we were having so much fun. Bill Hoolan, right, Steve?
Yeah, Bill Hoolan showed up with a drum, and he said, you know what, I'm having so much fun, I need to express it in some other way besides doing the minuet or whatever it is. How about a drum? I go, hey, have at it. So,
and Bill started banging on the drum, and that's when Steve got up and started singing In Your Easter Bonnet in Swahili or...
No, it's Polynesian.
All right, Bobby, if you call that a Christian service...
Absolutely, and I would put that up against any Christian service that you go to.
Now I know you're nuts, because I haven't heard any Christian service like that. And where's the mention of Jesus in all of this, and the birth and the resurrection, because that's what Easter's about.
The resurrection? What do you call the ham? Oh!
You know what, Bobby, you ought to be slapped right across the face for that.
I'm joking around.
The ham doesn't exactly survive, does it?
Well, it may live again.
All right, Steve, you know, I don't think you're funny.
Mr. Hendry, you have to understand that at the Western States Homeowners Association, we are a creative people. We must let the inner id and the inner superego, all those things that make us, we must express those. and we do it very respectfully, and we do it very religiously, but we're going to do it. Make no mistake about it, it'll get done.
Yeah, and make no mistake about it, we're going to do it, and it'll get done. Because that could...
Throw the furniture in, yay!
Fuck that.
God damn, Phil.
Well, Phil,
F that. I mean, are you kidding me?
A little late to say F, Mr. Henry.
You guys gonna jump on me now, huh?
No, I don't just understand, Mr. Henry.
Every year she does that.
Well, you know what? Every year somebody ought to call the sheriff out to it. Every year the sheriff ought to show up, and every year she can do it and send the sheriff out there.
Yeah, they ought to start making some arrests or something, because...
Why do you say that?
Something ain't right. Guy, a frenzy dancing around a bonfire, people throwing their top coats off, forget it. All right, folks, coming up next... Coming up next, we have, I think it'll be a very, very interesting, As You Like to Hear Them. It's going to be Sean Spicer, and he will be with us on As You Like to Hear Them. Sean Spicer on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show from the El Pacifico in Southern California. We'll be right back.
Yeah!
Micronesia, one of the world's great undiscovered spots. And now, Micronesia can be yours. It can be yours in this travel package that we sell from Erdogan Books. These beautiful books, full-colored, with letters and writing, and look, see, even writing on the spine. Open them up and look at the pages. Look at the beautiful colored pictures. Forget about the writing. It's nothing you'd understand anyway. These beautiful books can be yours from Erdogan Library. Micronesia, and next month, we'll be featuring one called Wisconsin. All yours at a very minimal price. If you'll just send us a check, okay, a money order, fine. We prefer credit cards and cash. You gotta love that. Only if you send cash, wrap it up in something like,
Yeah, so no one can see it.
All of these books from Erdogan Library, Micronesia, Wisconsin. Oh, look at this. Here's one. The Abandoned Mines of the American Southwest. Micronesia, just another place to visit from Erdogan Books. Erdogan Books, showing you just some other place to visit. Some other place to take a load off.
All right, welcome back to the program, folks, and it is time now on the world-famous Phil Henry Show for As You Like to Hear Them. This is a feature that we run on the program from time to time. We interview a person in the news, and they absolutely must tell the truth. Joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Sean Spicer, I don't want to say the embattled press secretary, Mr. Spicer. You're far from that, but, you know, it seems like every day you're taking shots.
I'm taking shots?
I mean, you are taking as incoming shots.
Oh, yeah, I am. And I can understand it, too.
Why do you understand it?
I say a lot of stupid stuff. I don't know why I say stupid. I do know why. I want to impress President Trump, but I wind up just saying dumb stuff.
All right, well, let's start out with some of the dumb stuff you've been saying this past week. You told that one reporter, the young lady from the Urban Radio Network, stop shaking your head. Why'd you do that?
Because at my heart, I'm a pig, a male pig, particularly when it comes to a woman of color. It's an instinctive thing that I do. Do I like it? I don't like, if somebody asked me about it, I don't like it, but in my private time, I don't even think about it. But
so this was instinctive?
It was instinctive because I was being pressured by a very intelligent woman. She wanted answers, I think, on the, what is the image control of the White House?
Yeah, she's talking about how's the White House going to control the image.
Right.
Yeah, and that guy Dickman asking me such a good question, that angers me, too.
Why?
Because I want to feel like I'm somebody.
All right, so it gets down to you not feeling like you're anybody, right, Sean?
Not really. I mean, ever since college, I've been taking crap. People calling me, you know, Sean Sphincter. And my personality doesn't help. I have a combative style. I'm not a very funny guy. I'm an irritating-looking guy. I've got red eyes like I've been staying up all night crying. And then, of course, I really, you know, did myself a service by going out there in a suit that didn't fit.
Why was that, by the way?
I didn't have any new suits. I had a bunch of old suits, so I had to run out and get some suits. And I didn't bother to get them fitted. I just put on a jacket, and there I was.
So you needed a new suit?
It was a new suit, but nobody mentioned that.
Well, people are not going to mention your new suit when they can't see about 9/10 of it because you're behind that podium, and the only part they can see is doesn't fit.
What do you mean, so I'm that short, huh?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you do. I don't know how tall you are, Sean, but the podium almost covers you up completely. So, anyway, well, maybe not completely, but so anyway, let's get back to the reporter from the National Urban Radio Network, who is pressing you on the whole, you know, the public image of the White House and how they were going to do damage control.
Right. So I was trying to tell her that there's no Russian connection.
Do you believe that, by the way?
I don't know if there's a Russian connection or not. I hope that there isn't, because that if there is, then that's going to make life even more miserable for me. But I got to say no, because the president's watching, and every day I got to talk to him.
Is that a very pleasant...
Not particularly, no. No, it isn't. But I wanted a job, a high-profile job in the media, and people were saying, well, why don't you go to work for this newspaper or that? And I said, I want something more. And then along came Donald Trump, and because I'm not that smart, I saw him as, you know, he was going to be a great president, and this was my chance, because I didn't think he was bright enough, you know what I'm saying, to...
You didn't think he was bright enough to what?
To know what a good press secretary was. So I calculated, I was right.
So you got the job. Now, you go and you talk to him every day.
Every day, yeah.
And what does he say to you?
Well, generally, he'll make fun of my face, my looks. He'll say, hey, good job. But then he goes on, he talks about, you know, how ugly I am and my stupid-looking suits.
Why do you stand there and take that?
Because it's worth it, because I'm the press secretary.
And that's it, man. You're the press secretary, and you are the press secretary to the president of the United States.
You got it. You know, so...
Do you have a wife?
I have a wife, yeah.
And what does she? What do you think if she thinks you're being abused?
What do I think if she thinks that I...
No, do you mind looking like you're being abused in the eyes of your wife?
It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, if she starts to complain about it, I'll tell her to shut up, and I'll just go in the other room and turn the TV up. I mean, that part doesn't register with me. This is about me and my career, and Donald Trump, you know, was the guy that came along and helped me out.
All right, we keep getting off track here.
Yeah, what about the reporter?
So what about the reporter?
Okay, so she kept pressing me on the whole issue of, you know, the damage control, and then she brought up Russia. And I said, you guys are going to find a Russian connection, no, wherever you look for it. And then I came out with what I thought was a really good line. If the president puts Russian dressing on his salad, you'll say that there's a Russian connection.
All right. In other words, you're trivializing what a lot of people think is a very important investigation.
Oh, I know it's an important investigation. It may be an important investigation, but I'm not going to take it seriously. Otherwise, I got to listen to Trump, you know, when I get at the end of the day screaming and yelling at me because I didn't. So my whole job is to do what the president would do, which is to minimize it, mock it, ridicule it, and say it ain't, you know, diddly.
All right. So and then you made the statement that everybody got angry, said, stop shaking your head.
Right. Right.
All right. Why did you say that? Because you're just a...
Because I'm a condescending asshole, and that is something that I just automatically comes out of me. I'm pretty rude to begin with. To a black woman, I'm going to be doubly rude because I don't, you know, in my life, I never really had any encounters where I had to be polite to any, to a black woman. I mean, I've had to be polite to women, and that's bothered me too. But
so you don't even like being polite to a woman, no matter what the color?
No, no, not at all. Well, I don't mind it so long as she's not making me look bad. But in that instance, she was making me look bad. And I was getting angry that not because she was saying false things. For all I know, she's saying true things. I was getting angry because she was getting the better of me, you know.
And you were looking stupid in the eyes of the public?
Yeah, I knew. I'm on TV. And then when she started shaking her head, I lost my temper and I said, stop shaking your head as if I were a slave master or as if I were her dad.
Right. And that's what I think people, took exception to.
Well, a slave master would have done a lot worse.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So there is a redeeming moment there for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't seem like much.
No, it isn't.
No, it isn't.
It's not.
No, it isn't.
All right. Thanks, bud.
Well, okay, so no, it isn't, but so I wasn't a slave master, but yeah, it was condescending.
Sean, when you went out there the very first time and you said that the inaugural crowd is the biggest ever, period, and we all knew that it wasn't, And I suspect you knew, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I suspect the president knew.
Yeah, the president knew, too.
So what kind of a game is that, where everybody knows that what you're saying isn't true and you're saying it anyway?
Well, it's what the president does, as I understand it, is he just lies and then insists that his lie is true and doesn't back off of the lie. And it kind of sits there in the record as something that is that Kellyanne Conway brought it up. She said an alternative fact. So
so you take that alternative fact thing seriously?
I don't know. I don't even know what she means, but I think I know. And she can think whatever she wants. I know it was a small crowd, but I'm going to say it was a big crowd because Trump told me to say that. And he wants to say it because he wants everyone to believe that it is a big crowd.
Does he think people are that stupid?
Yeah, that's the whole point. He thinks just enough. The people that voted for him certainly are that stupid. So he knows he's got those people. And that's 62 million people. That's a lot. Then he figures he can probably grab a few others. By the end of the day, he may have people actually thinking that, you know, it was a big crowd.
So, you know, there's an old, people keep referring to 1984, the book. But in that book, the guy that represents Big Brother says to Winston, he says, how many fingers am I holding up?
Yeah. And Winston says two. And if the state says there's three.
Yeah, if the state says there's three, how many? And he finally answers correctly, says three. That's kind of what Donald Trump's about, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't know that he didn't read 1984, because I'm not sure he's ever read a book, but that's essentially what he has learned, to say it, and he is the state, and so what he says is true. And, you know, and he's running up against people that are, you know, causing him a hard time.
Now, what is your read on that? Do you think that the people that are causing him a hard time, like these guys in Congress and other citizens, are going to win, or will Trump eventually just overwhelm them?
I think Trump has a good chance of overwhelming them. I mean, it takes a lot of guts, it takes a lot of courage, and it takes a lot of coordination and people kind of moving in the same direction, and I don't see that. You got people in Congress like that Nunez, who has got his own agenda.
By the way, does Trump respect that guy?
No. Trump doesn't respect anybody, but he can use Nunez.
So he's using him to disseminate bad information?
Yeah, exactly. But no, he doesn't respect Nunez. He doesn't respect all the people he says he respects, he doesn't respect. And the people that, the only people that he respects are people that are, you know, got one up on him, and he can't do anything about it. For instance, if he actually gets impeached and thrown out of there, he won't respect anybody that did that to him. But if he gets impeached and thrown out of there, but then there's some redeeming part, like maybe he gets the, I don't know what, you know, maybe he's thrown, maybe the history books treat him well, then he might not feel so bad.
But who does he really respect?
Well, he only really respects people that he fears. And
who does he fear?
So far, I can't tell.
What about Hillary Clinton?
Forget it, man.
All right, so he doesn't fear. What about... So nobody in the Congress.
No, he doesn't. He's not afraid of any of them, because he thinks he can beat all of them.
All right, and he doesn't respect you.
Oh, not at all. No,
he thinks you're an idiot.
He thinks I'm a complete idiot. He thinks I'm a complete tool. He thinks Nunez is a tool.
What about his wife Melania?
He doesn't think about her at all, man. Other than the fact that she better look good. He was up there.
Well, he was at that women's conference that they had at the White House, empowering women. What did he think of that?
It was just a dog and pony show to him. He gets up there. He has all these women buying into they think he cares about him. Of course he doesn't. And Melania is there, and as long as she's looking good.
What about his daughter, Ivanka?
Well, now there's somebody that I think you asked, does he fear her? No. Does he respect her? I think he does, because he fears losing the love of his kids. Now, that's something he fears. He doesn't want to lose their love. If he lost their love, then he would have to become their enemy, and he doesn't want that to happen. He feels he can crush anybody, including his kids. But if he loses his kids, he loses an important ally, and I think that would weaken him. So you ask me what he's afraid of? It's that.
Losing the love of Ivanka?
All of them. All four of them, yeah, or five.
What about, Tiffany?
Yeah, he doesn't care about Tiffany, does he?
Not really. No, he doesn't care about Tiffany, but he can use her. So to that end, I guess she's sort of important. But I would say that things are going very, very well. The president is, he's a scumbag, and I'm helping him be that scumbag. So I don't know what you want me to say about it.
All right, well, thank you, Sean Spicer.
Thanks a lot, guys.
So how about that, huh? Sean Spicer, the press secretary for the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Wow.
Well, and he said that that Trump fears losing the love of his children.
That's what he said. Whether it's true or not is anybody's guess. Guys, that finishes the show out. Now, I wanted to tell you, we have our new website, and it is up. And we're going to be doing a real big rollout of this. We will be doing a tutorial. We will be showing you what's what and what's up with our website. We want you to head over there right now. Check it out, philhenryshow.com. It's our new design. And I like it because,
it's got the light colors and all the characters are highlighted.
Yeah, but like Chris Norton and people like that.
Yeah, we highlight some of the most important characters from the show down through the years. We have, I think, a much more usable look. We have places where you can sign up for a newsletter. We have places where, you can access the archives from a few different places. It's an intuitive site. I think you'll like it. And it is our new design. But as I said, we're going to do a much broader and a much more, big-time rollout in the days to come here at world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So from all of us, to all of you, which I think it's all of, is it one, two? Yeah, it's all of you guys. Thank you so much for being with us, guys. I thank Chris Norton, and I thank Frank Gray, and I thank
Bob Green.
Bob Green, all those cats for helping us out and doing the fill-in thing for us earlier in the week. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Get over there and get a backstage pass.
See you tomorrow night.
We'll see you tomorrow, yeah. Not tomorrow night.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, executive produced by Phil Hendry for Siepre Incorporated, all rights reserved on Podcast One.